This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
South Africa's embattled president has emerged intact from his latest challenge, this one from within his own party. The ruling African National Congress held lengthy closed-door meetings on party members' call for President Jacob Zuma to resign, but ultimately decided to let him stay.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details next.
Also, a top advisor to Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has escaped an assassination attempt. And despite the government issuing $10 million worth of bond notes, Zimbabwe's cash shortage problem appears to be far from over.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, South Africa's embattled president has emerged intact from his latest challenge, this one from within his own party. The ruling African National Congress held lengthy closed-door meetings on party members' call for President Jacob Zuma to resign, but ultimately decided to let him stay. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's president has been given a reprieve by top members of the ruling ANC. Tuesday's announcement caps 3 days of intense discussions by the nation's top political actors as President Jacob Zuma sinks lower in public esteem amid growing accusations of corruption. ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe said the discussions among the six-member National Executive Committee, a group that includes Zuma, were robust, candid, and at times difficult.
The ANC did not support the call for the president to step down.
South Africa's anti-corruption czar recently released a 355-page report documenting the president's links to a wealthy family who have allegedly steered cabinet decisions and improperly influenced government contracts. The corruption allegations have prompted the opposition to cry for his resignation. The mounting scandals also hurt the ANC in municipal polls earlier this year, leading them to lose control of several major cities. But the party's comfortable majority in parliament allowed Zuma to defeat a no-confidence vote earlier this month. The most recent challenge to Zuma came as a surprise when three ANC stalwarts, the nation's tourism minister, health minister, and public works minister, called for the president's resignation, prompting the discussions. The ANC National Executive Committee has the power to demand the president's resignation. It has used it once before, in 2008, ousting President Thabo Mbeki to open the door for Zuma. Analyst Aubrey Mashitni says he does not think the committee's refusal to make Zuma step down means they have confidence in him.
Last weekend's meeting of the NEC, the National Executive Committee of the ANC, was a turning point because what it does signal is the possibility that the battle to get rid of Jacob Zuma as president of the party and all the country is gaining momentum. The question is whether those who are opposed to Jacob Zuma will have enough support to dislodge him before the National Conference of the ANC in December next year.
Mashikni says the next big battle will come then, when the party chooses a presidential candidate for the 2019 election, when Zuma's second term ends.
We are now on the cusp of what may be a divisive and bruising succession battle.
After a wild year, observers say South African politics may get even wilder in 2017. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A top advisor to Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, has escaped an assassination attempt. It's the latest in a series of targeted attacks that have rocked the country since political tensions began last year. Moses Javierimana reports from Bujumbura.
President Pierre Nkurunziza's aide, Willy Nyamitwe, narrowly escaped an assassination attempt by an armed group while on his way back home on Monday evening. The ambush left one of his bodyguards dead and another injured. Nyamitwe sustained wounds to his arm. Authorities say One soldier has been arrested in connection with the attack. Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye says this is the third time Mr. Nyamitwe has escaped the assassination.
Some of the perpetrators were arrested during the two times. Between them, one soldier and another colonel. So this soldier told us that people who are behind the targeted killing are based in Kigali, in Rwanda.
The police spokesman blamed Rwanda for this attack as well, and former colonial power Belgium.
Because they can't come themselves to commit this attack here, they use Rwanda as a country which is near our country. They use Rwanda and political opposition members who fled, who are now in Rwanda. So they collaborate and they organize these attacks from Kigali.
Nyamitwe is one of the most prominent voices in Burundi, and active Twitter, who frequently criticizes the West of interfering in the Central African nation. The presidential advisor lives on the outskirts of Bujumbura capital, in a neighborhood called Kajaga. A local citizen calling himself Emmanuel says that people in this area are worried about security.
Sasa hivi hapa Kajaga tunaona kuna manyumba yalijengewa, lakini hayo manyumba yenyewe yalijenga, hakuna mtu wote
anayesema. In Kajaga there are many unfinished and abandoned houses which are left unoccupied most of the time. Emmanuel says this is where suspicious groups of people are seen gathering every evening, and they can easily target whoever they want. Nyamitwe have been at loggerheads with the International Federation of Human Rights after it released a 200-page report that warned of a possible genocide in the country. The group blames most human rights abuses on the regime's security forces and the youth militias of the ruling party. Among the crimes reported are murder, kidnapping, disappearances, torture, rape and mass detention. Relations between Burundi and Rwanda have continued to deteriorate since last year, when protests against the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza erupted. The opposition says the president's decision to run for a third term was unconstitutional. Burundi and the international community had accused Rwanda of providing military training to refugees who could return home to destabilize the country. The Rwandan government also accused Burundi of sheltering FDLR rebels, whom Kigali accuses of committing the 1994 genocide. There have been several attacks on the government figures in the past year. They include an unsuccessful grenade attack in April on Human Rights Minister Martin Nivyabandi and his wife, and the killing in August of another close aide to the president, General Adolphe Nshimirimana. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Investigators have not yet announced whether they believe yesterday's attack by a student at Ohio State University was a terrorist attack. 11 people were injured. The attacker is identified as 18-year-old Abdul Razak Ali Artin. He drove his car into a group of pedestrians on campus, then got out and began stabbing people with a butcher knife. Artin was shot dead by a campus security guard. Artin was born in Somalia, but reportedly was a legal permanent U.S. resident. The Associated Press reports most of the victims were Ohio State University students. The majority were injured by the car. Two were stabbed and one had a fractured skull. AP says Artin was not known to U.S. federal investigators prior to yesterday's attack. Authorities say Artin published a post on Facebook minutes before the incident in which he blamed America for killing Muslims abroad and praised an Al-Qaeda cleric as a hero. The Council on American and Islamic Relations and Somali community leaders said during a press conference that Ohioans of every faith denounce and reject this attack.
Somalia's presidential elections were scheduled for tomorrow, but the head of Somalia's electoral body announced yesterday they will be postponed. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig speaks to analysts about what this postponement could mean for the electoral process amid corruption allegations and other challenges.
In Somalia's complicated election system, clan and regional delegates have elected roughly 50% of the members of the lower and upper houses of parliament. The presidential election cannot take place until the remaining parliament members are selected. So it will take some more time before lawmakers determine Somalia's next president, as specified in the provisional federal constitution. Nairobi-based Somalia affairs commentator Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad says he understands the ongoing selection process must be rescheduled, but argues that it should happen soon.
If the current selection process failed to conclude for the next 15 days, then legitimacy of the head of state, legitimacy the members of parliament, legitimacy the members of the Senate will be in question.
The head of Somalia's electoral body said Monday the new president will be elected before the end of the year. But allegations of bribery, intimidation, and improper changes in delegations have plagued the electoral process. Some people, like Abdi Samatar, a Somali-born economic geographer at the University of Minnesota, says such problems will definitely tarnish the results.
If I was in a casino, God forbid that, but if I was in a casino, I will bet whatever little resources I have, and over the last 30 years while I've been working, that this will produce a corrupt regime and will indeed produce more fragmented Somalia than the 2012 or the ones prior to that. The level of corruption, culturally, politically, economically, is just beyond this world, frankly.
Others, like Chatham House Research Associate Ahmed Suleiman, admit corruption is a problem, but say there are some positive signs. He gives the example of electoral authorities dismissing votes in some regions after officials were found not adhering to the 30% female representation quota.
There are also positive signs just in the very nature of how this election is being followed, and it's being much more widely reported on, and social media is being used to tabulate and count every single seat, every single individual that comes into those seats. So there's a lot of scrutiny that's happening.
Suleiman believes that working on the electoral process is more important than adhering to a strict deadline at this stage. In the electoral process, some 14,000 delegates representing Somalia's clans are electing members to the 275-member lower house of parliament. Regional parliaments are selecting the 54-member upper house of parliament. Somalia does not yet have a one-person, one-vote electoral system, though many citizens and experts hope that can be achieved in the near future. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. South African President Jacob Zuma has survived the latest political attempt to force him out of office. A top advisor to Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has escaped an assassination attempt. And Somalia's presidential elections, scheduled for tomorrow, have been postponed. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UN Refugee Agency reports that despite grave risks, thousands of refugees from the Horn of Africa continue to make the perilous journey across the Gulf of Aden to Yemen. These refugees are desperate to escape difficult conditions at home. At least 79 have been reported dead or missing at sea this year. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports nearly 106,000 people, mostly from Ethiopia and Somalia, have risked their lives on the high seas to reach Yemen so far this year. This is 13,000 more than all of 2015. The UNHCR says many of them embark from coastal towns in Somalia and Djibouti, and that they are ill-informed about the worsening conflict and deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Yemen. The agency says it plans to launch a regional information campaign in December to try to prevent the refugees and migrants from attempting the treacherous crossing. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA such campaigns have limited success but are useful in informing people about the dangers they can expect to encounter both at sea and after arriving in Yemen.
But at the same time, they cannot be expected to simply discourage people who are fleeing very difficult conditions at home, whether it's war, persecution, famine, or whatever. So these campaigns are useful and necessary, but they have to go hand in hand with improving conditions in the countries of origin. Otherwise, they will fail.
Spindler says those who survive the risky journey face conflict, abuse, and exploitation on arrival in Yemen.
UNHCR has received reports of physical and sexual abuse, deprivation of food and water, abduction, extortion, torture, and forced labor by smugglers and criminal networks, as well as arbitrary arrest, detention, and deportation. Prolonged conflict and insecurity has also facilitated the proliferation of trafficking and extortion networks targeting new arrivals.
The UNHCR reports many of the migrants go to Yemen hoping to move on to Saudi Arabia in search of work. A few people, it says, reportedly have set their sights on reaching Europe, thereby compounding their risks. It says those people depart Yemen for Sudan and go by road to Libya or Egypt, where they make the dangerous Mediterranean Sea crossing to Europe. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe's cash shortage problem appears to be far from over. The government is issuing $10 million worth of bond notes that officially trade on par with the U.S. dollar. But as Sebastian Monfu reports from Harare, the new currency has already lost some value against the greenback.
Morning, we have not received the security features of the bond notes. We are clarifying with RBZ.
The female voice is an attendant at a gasoline station refusing to accept bond notes from a motorist. We don't know the security features of the new currency, she says. We are trying to clarify with the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, the RBZ. Similar scenes of confusion and delay are happening across Zimbabwe as people try to obtain and use the new bond notes that the government introduced Monday. In Harare, Mary Murwi says she waited in a bank line 6 hours Tuesday to withdraw cash. The pain we go through to get cash is too much. Even someone serving at Chikurubi Maximum Prison is better. What have we done to deserve this? I should be getting my money on time. I thought, since it is second day after the introduction of bond notes, I would get my money on time. When Muri got her cash, she found it was worth less than advertised. Monday, I went to buy foreign currency for my child going to South Africa. For 100 bond notes, I got $70. So it means it will not be 50-50 against the US dollar as we were told. Zimbabwe has been relying on foreign currencies, mainly the US dollar and South African rand, since abandoning its own worthless currency in 2009. President Robert Mugabe's government introduced the bond notes despite warnings from economists that the new currency will fuel hyperinflation and worsen an economy that has struggled since the turn of the century. Political opposition and civic organizations say they are planning protests against the bond notes. Not everyone is against the new currency. A song composed by singer Stana says the bond notes will ease cash shortages in Zimbabwe. But the question remains, will that actually happen? On Monday, economist Prosper Chitambara with the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe told VOA that the $200 million worth of bond notes the government plans to put into the circulation would not ease the cash shortage, as the country requires much more. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Older babies in Brazil exposed to the Zika virus in the womb have been found with microcephaly. It's marked by an unusually small head and brain, even though the severe birth defect was not physically apparent at birth. The latest finding poses additional challenges for public health officials trying to understand and contain what they are calling congenital Zika syndrome. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
A study published in the U.S. journal Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report involved 13 babies in two Brazilian states born with small heads, but not small enough to be diagnosed with microcephaly. They were tested and found to be positive for Zika. Imaging scans of the baby's head soon after birth showed brain abnormalities. Researchers then followed the infants. Around the time of their first birthday, 11 of the 13 babies were diagnosed with microcephaly. Their heads and brains had not developed in proportion to their growth and size. While pregnant, their mothers had been infected with Zika, a mosquito-borne illness that has swept across the Americas. Ernesto Marquez, who was not part of the study, is an infectious diseases specialist at the University of Pittsburgh. For the last 2 years, Marquez has studied microcephaly caused by Zika in newborns. Marquez says the latest finding is new.
What it means is that even babies that were born with a brain or, you know, a cranium with a normal diameter, they still may have the congenital disease and some other sequela that's not just as visible.
Microcephaly causes severe neurological problems, including seizures, eye and hearing problems, and motor difficulties similar to cerebral palsy. All of the problems have come to be known as congenital Zika syndrome. There's no treatment for Zika or a way to prevent microcephaly in susceptible infants. But in babies who were suspected of having the condition, Marquez says it's important to identify those with vision and hearing problems as soon as possible. Marquez notes that sight and sound stimulate brain development.
The diagnostic of visual issues and hearing issues in those babies is very important, and to treat that in order to minimize the damage or the impact of the other neurological problems these babies have.
Marquez says there are eyeglasses and other devices to enhance sight and hearing in babies, potentially limiting the severity of microcephaly. Unlike newborns with microcephaly, researchers say older infants appear to have less severe brain damage. Some reportedly made good eye contact and smiled, although the babies were still too young to test their cognitive skills and extent of physical disability. Researchers note the study was small, so it's impossible to say how often microcephaly might be diagnosed in older infants affected by Zika. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. We'll be right back.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at President Barack Obama's legacy in Africa and the U.S. Join guest host Esther Gidui Ewart and her panel of guests as they take a close look at President Obama's legacy in Africa and the United States. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.